Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Hello and welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In the next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Wayne Leslie from the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation. So tell me a little bit about the foundation.
Sure. The foundation was started in 1995 by a woman named Josephine Mills, who was a physiotherapist, who had no direct connection to Down syndrome other than professionally through her work. She became aware of the community and the needs of the community. She professionally was a physiotherapist. And in connecting with families, became interested in the fact that the community, the Down syndrome community, was generally underserved, and there was a real need, and decided that the one way to address that would be to start an organization. At the time, it was the Down Syndrome Research Foundation. So when we started in 1995, which makes this year our 25th anniversary, one of the primary focuses was research. To develop a better understanding of Down syndrome, which is a genetic condition, and also to start formulating a better understanding of how to better support individuals with Down syndrome. At the beginning, there was always a bit of program and service delivery, but at the time it involved anywhere from 5 to 10 kids, so very small. Most of the work was research. And then over time, the organization evolved to do more program and service delivery and less research, because we discovered that programs and services was really the greatest need in the community. And that's where we sit today. Most recently, a year ago, our name finally caught up with our core mandate that we've been doing since at least 10 or 15 years ago, which is programs and services and resources. So now we're the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation.
So can you give me an overview of some of the resources and services you do provide?
Absolutely. So we are one of the, if not the largest, Down syndrome service providers in Canada. We're based in Burnaby, British Columbia. We provide a host of individualized services, speech-language therapy, occupational therapy, one-to-one education programs, primarily reading and math. We also do one-to-one education programs. Those are designed for young adults, everything from communication, interpersonal, pre-employment, skill development, communication and navigation, so teaching individuals with Down syndrome how to be autonomous and independent and ride the bus. And then we also have group recreational programs designed for fitness and fun and socialization, everything from dance to yoga to taekwondo.
So are there any challenges in providing such services?
Absolutely. One of the biggest we always face is cost. We're an organization that is largely not public funded. Only 10% of our budget every year is from public funding. So by and large, all of the money that we use to run our programs is self-funded or self-raised. We do it through an extensive fundraising program. And one of the challenges we have is we address the great systemic barrier that most families have, which is not only general access to programs, but affordability of programs. So every single one of DSRS programs, whether it's individual or group, are subsidized. Our ability to subsidize rests solely on our shoulders and our ability to raise money. So typically every year we go into the year with an extensive plan to raise funds to not only pay for the programs, we employ professional speech therapists, occupational therapists, certified teachers, behavioral specialists. So not only to cover the cost, but cover them in a way that allows us to offer them to families and individuals at significantly less than they would pay if they were seeking something similar in the private sector.
So to look at the converse side of things, in your time with the foundation, has there been any success story that stands out for you?
Absolutely. There are quite a few. I was speaking fairly recently with a parent of a child who has been coming to DSRF for about 10 years. And when they first found DSRF, they were feeling that the opportunities for their child would be quite limited. And through DSRF, they were explaining to us as they continued to grow and evolve with our programs, they started initially with therapy. That has evolved over the time, that evolved into occupational therapy. And now the individual is older, in their early 20s, and in our group programs, and has just completely surpassed what the parents, as much as they had great hopes and sights set for what their son could achieve, they have exceeded that. And so it's just an example of, in particular, while we work in a very individualized or customized environment, because all of our programming is specialized to Down syndrome, we're one of the few organizations in Canada that works specifically in the Down syndrome space. So it's what we eat, sleep, and breathe every day. But we also do everything individualized. So it's not cookie cutter. Everything is done to meet the individual needs. So the individual success stories are very much individual success stories. And in this particular family's case, with this particular young man, they watched him grow, and it really speaks to, because of the way our programs not only work individually, but are complementary to each of the program spaces we work in, they really support the individual across the lifespan. So in other words, instead of this young man getting a good start with DSRF when he was 4 or 5, and then we find out 10 years later he moved on to do other things and was very successful, which would be wonderful. He's continued to grow across the lifespan and continues to come to DSRF, has expanded his universe and certainly gets involved in programs and opportunities in the community, which is what we empower them to do, but at the same time has continued to see value in coming to DSRF, which continues to help him grow in the community. So it's that kind of a success story that's actually quite common in the work we do.
So, do you know offhand how many people are affected with Down syndrome?
I do. So, generally in Canada, the population numbers for Down syndrome are anywhere between 45,000 and 50,000. In Canada, the birth rate is roughly 1 in 700, 1 in 750. In British Columbia, we estimate the Down syndrome population is somewhere around 4,000. And in the primary age group that we work with, which is children, youth, and young adults, and by young adults, that's generally those between the ages of 18 or 19, right up till the mid-20s, is right around 2,000 people. And then it varies provincially in terms of how those total 45 to 50,000 in Canada are spread out.
Right. Thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
This next segment of our show, I'll be chatting with David Harshaw, who'll be telling us a little bit about the work of the Tetra Society. So tell me a little bit about the work of the Tetra Society.
Tetra Society makes devices to make things possible for people with physical challenges. They will make any type of device that allows you to do something, like they've made strollers, guitar picks, lights, canopies, anything that would allow you to be more out in the public or to help you do a task that you normally couldn't do. And the devices are not readily available. Like, you can go to the Experience Mobility and buy a device that helps you reach something. Tetra is more interested in stuff that has not been on the market. And they make any device that they can to help someone just live a better life.
So what are some of the more common mobility challenges you see that people want products to deal with?
My chapter, we've made a lot of cup holders. We've made fold-down canopies that go on these power chairs that help people with MS that can't be out in the sun. People with children have difficulty holding them, so they make devices to make that easier. That's some of the things.
So how do you spread the word about the work you do?
You go out and you do presentations, and you go to events, mainly presentations, and mostly it works with volunteers. Volunteers go out and make contacts with different groups to see if anybody needs anything.
So are there any challenges in custom designing something for a person with disability?
Yes, because everybody is different. Some people have their hands don't work properly, so they may not be able to use the device that you or I might use because of their limited mobility already. For example, the Windsor chapter created a phone holder for a lady, and it also held her remote door opener. Because she couldn't move, she couldn't pull it from her purse. So we had to put it like right in place so she could see it and use it with ease.
So, in your time with Tetra, what's been the greatest success you've witnessed?
Oh, that's hard to answer because we've made a lot of different stuff. The one thing that we made years ago was a canopy for someone that could not go outside because they can be in the sun. We created a canopy that charged the USB battery, and as long as the chair was out in the sun, she had a fan and a canopy and a phone charger. That was one of my favorites.
So what are some of the more common products, aside from canopies and cup holders, that you've developed?
We developed kitchen stuff also, like, for example, an inductive burner for somebody who could not hold a frying pan. And we made a fence around the burner, and we made an island that you could turn on and off with your voice, which was another one that was really good. That person learned how to cook. And from knowing nothing, from being unable to do anything, to managing an entire house, bills, cooking, food management, shopping, all of that came from two different devices.
Do you work in partnership with any other organizations?
We're not partners, but we try and work with all the other organizations. We try and touch as many people as we can. We're willing to work with anyone. We've worked with the MS Society. We've worked with the hospitals, the occupational therapists, and sometimes the mobility places.
So what message would you send to the community about the need for adaptation in disability products?
Tetra's got a lot of really good people that have done a lot of really good products. Tetra is North American wide, and the nice thing is we can draw on our other chapter coordinators, and there's a lot of stuff on Tetra Nation, and there's nothing that's impossible. I mean, some things may be difficult, but everything is possible.
So if you yourself could see any one product added to the market, something that you'd like created, what would it be?
I would like to see canopies for people that can't go outside. I would like to see different type of reachers and different type of phone holders or cup holders or just the different things. that we've created. Like, mainly, we've done a lot of different holders for things. We've even done camera holders for people who want to do photography classes and they can't hold the camera. So, just, in my opinion, a broader look at what people actually need would be most important.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
And I'll take my time next time.
The Women's Center is a gender-inclusive space on the University of Windsor campus. Want a place to talk, hang out, get free resources like condoms, pads, and tampons? How about a place to volunteer and get involved on campus? Then stop by room 208 of the CAW Student Center. Our hours are Monday to Thursday from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. and Fridays from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter for more info at WOMXNCTR or email us at WOMXNCTR@uwindsor.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from David Harshaw from the Tetra Society and from Wayne Leslie from the Down Syndrome Resource Foundation. In this segment of our show, we're going to hear from Stephen Spahn from the Able Gamers Charity. Tell me a little bit about the Able Gamers Charity.
Yeah, so Able Gamers is a 501c3 nonprofit charity, which essentially means that we do good for the world, and we do it at no profit. Our mission statement is creating opportunities that enable play in order to combat social isolation, foster inclusive communities, and improve the quality of life for people with disabilities. And that's all fancy nonprofit speak for we help people in a lot of different ways with our pillars, including peer support, community development, and research and development. So we bring people to our headquarters or online through our portal. We assess their abilities and what their challenges are and where their desires lie. And then we figure out how we support them in giving them free technology to be able to game better or for the first time.
So what sorts of game adaptations have you made in the course of your work?
You know, our research and engineering department have done a lot of cool things, and I've gotten to personally be involved in quite a few of them. The ones that have meant the most to us have obviously been the Xbox Adaptive Controller. We worked with Xbox and Secrecy for nearly 3.5 years to help bring this thing to life, consulting with them, you know, from ground zero on, you know, how the controller should look, what it should be, what it should be able to do. We actually built something called an Adroit Switchblade with a company called Evil Controllers long ago that did virtually the same thing that the XAC does today. However, the price point on that was nearly $400, and that was selling it at cost for what it was costing to build it. The XAC being only $100 made it so much more affordable and more accessible to everyone at that price point. And we've gotten to do some really cool other creations along the way. For example, the Freedom Adapter was one of the ones we just came out with. We partnered with Bill Minko over at AT Makers to allow wheelchairs to just straight up plug into Xbox and PlayStation, and you can play with your joystick on your wheelchair. So you don't even need a controller in your hand. You can use the same setup that you use to drive. And that is going to be amazing for people who are profoundly disabled, who their primary, you know, physical ability allows them to drive a wheelchair, and that's it. You know, they're not going to be able to hold a standard controller. And so all of the positioning and all of the, you know, get-up that they have in order to be as comfortable as possible is already done. They're going to be able to game right from that position, and that is super important. And then, you know, we've done some other cool things we patented along the way, including having controllers inside of a table, which is perhaps one of the most unique ones we've done.
So, are there any challenges in developing the right technology to make any game adaptable for any potential player.
Well, you know, there's a lot of challenges that come with doing what Able Gamers does. You know, we say that we're able to get everyone to be able to play games. Now, what we never say is that we're able to get all players to play all games, because that would be an impossible goal. There are some things, for example, you know, I myself am in a power wheelchair and on a ventilator, so I am profoundly disabled. I'm never going to be someone who goes into Dance Dance Revolution and, you know, jumps around on the pad. I could put switches on it and be able to activate it with my thumbs, but that wouldn't be interesting to me because I'm not dancing. So, you know, there are limitations on what would still be fun to do. But, you know, fun is subjective. Fun is different for everyone. You know, we worked with Harmonix on, you know, working on Rock Band and talking to Alex, the CEO himself, and, you know, saying to him, you know, everybody would like to be able to play your game. You know, why haven't you ever done just one version where you can use one button to play? And his response was, well, I didn't think anybody would want to. And I was like, I would. Why not? So, you know, it's about opening eyes. It's about changing perspectives. It's about letting people know that it's not so much about the technical side. It's about leaving options open for people so that they can enjoy video gaming their way.
So, I'm curious, when you mentioned about navigating with the joystick to be able to play, how do you keep the wheelchair itself from responding when it's interfaced?
So you actually literally unplug it from the motors. So the way that wheelchairs work is you have a joystick that's plugged into a CPU on your wheelchair. And so there's a connection point between the joystick and the motors and motherboard of the wheelchair. You just unplug right where the joystick is, and then it becomes any other peripheral, the same as a flight stick for somebody who loves flight sims, or, you know, somebody who's operating a crane. And just plug it into a different device, and then it controls something differently.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Absolutely.
It's quite remarkable, my friends, that Able Gamers was able to take such a necessary piece of disability technology and turn it into something recreational. For someone in a wheelchair who can already operate their own means of transportation, then to be told, hey, if you can do this, you can do something you'll potentially enjoy a lot more. That's really amazing. But the fact is, accessible products are becoming more and more common. If you don't have an accessible product, it's simply alienating or isolating bunch of your own consumer base right there. And honestly, they might not always think of it from a humanistic standpoint, but from a business standpoint, you can bet somebody's attention will be captured. But in so much as creating something accessible because it's the right thing to do, because everyone at one time or another tends to need some sort of adaptation, that just takes a level of foresight that more and more people are starting to have. They're starting to recognize that if a person with a disability might enjoy the arts or enjoy music, maybe they'll enjoy something their contemporaries do. And if that happens to be video games, who's to say they shouldn't do it? Who's to say they can't do it? Things are only impossible until they're not, my friends. If the world doesn't fit, make alterations. If something doesn't exist, try and invent it. Try and create something to better the substance of existence, not just for people with disabilities, but for all of us. Many adaptations have been discovered to have more than one use. The wheelchair button. It's great for a person in a wheelchair, that's true. But for the mother who's carrying groceries and has to look after her kids and can't easily stop and get through the door, that button's a great thing to have, too. It's things like that that are just a little easier on us all. And Really, necessity is the mother of invention. If people don't think, yeah, I can participate in this, or yeah, I can use that, or be a part of this or that, they're not going to look for it. They're not going to look to create it. But a part of it is knowing our own rights, knowing that a person, regardless of where they come from, what their ability levels are, should have the freedom to choose and to be involved with whatsoever they would want to. And what that is simply depends on the individual. If they want to go out and become a painter, find a way to do it. If they want to learn how to beat King Koopa in the latest incarnation, give them a controller to let them do so. And if such a controller doesn't exist, ask questions. Talk to people. One word can change the world. Why? Simply ask, why can't we create something like this? If we can create something similar to this, or we can create something for another type of disability, why can't we explore the possibility? Are we somehow comfortable with our narrow-mindedness? Are we somehow comfortable knowing that our achievement and our creativity has a glass ceiling? The fact is, if you tell somebody that their opportunities are just this far traveling and no farther, odds are they're going to believe that. It's a matter of psychological conditioning. If you're told all your life that you're a disappointment, you'll never amount to this or that, how long before you accept that? And somebody else comes along and says, you are capable, you can do this. What are you going to be inclined to believe? The psychological garbage you've been fed all your life, or the idea that you can and should think beyond? Of course, there's the rare person who does see their own potential like that. And no matter what happens, they cannot be torn down. These days, it's fewer and far between for these people. And the truth is, we're all products of our environment. Somebody tells us we can recreate the world as something accessible. And if they show you things are possible, it shifts our thinking process from, I can't do this, it's hopeless, I'll never amount to anything, to, the world is full of opportunities, why don't I allow myself the dignity of getting involved in some? What David was saying about Tetra and their work, it's really remarkable as well, in so much as those canopies, they allow a person to be out and enjoying nature, even if direct sunlight is more of a risk to them. We can't cut ourselves off from the world simply because we have some things that might need to be slightly adjusted. Truth is, being out in nature, it's a therapeutic thing. And for these people, if there's a safe way of doing it with only a minimum attachment to a wheelchair, what's wrong with that? You make the attachment, it's a one-time thing, you're done. But the idea that it's been created, the fact that this advancement will be affixed to them and available to them, that stands. Yeah, one time you build it, but the use of it, the potential is unknown and unlimited. And yeah, humanity is all about thinking outside the box. Disability is no different in that sense. Truth is, you need someone to offer a different perspective. If it's all the same homogenized thinking process, you may go around in circles, you may make yourself dizzy, but you won't accomplish anything. It takes people with disabilities to speak to the actual needs, not some theoretical model that says it may affect you this, that, and the other way. Nothing about us without us includes opportunities, my friends. Includes the right to stand as part of society. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.